ready.
All right. Time being 6:04 p.m., I call the May 28th, 2024 Budget Subcommittee meeting to order. Did members get a chance to review the minutes from last meeting?
Yes.
All right, excellent. All right, so first up on tonight's agenda, we have a FY25 budget update. So Lucas and Bob, why don't take us away with that?
Okay, great. I'm going to kick it to Bob momentarily, but just wanted to run through the agenda. So we have a budget update for FY25. Then Bob's going to break down revolving accounts, mm-hmm. and give an update on that, and then open it up for questions to provide a more detailed analysis or information for folks.
Sure.
Excuse my voice today. And then future budget projections is a question that's come up from the school committee, from the community. So Bob wanted to talk through those scenarios around the past override, what that would look like and be modeled out as as it's been described to the community, just provide some deeper analysis and then open that up to questions as well. Hopefully that's helpful. As far as an update for FY25 budget, as you're aware, we are currently, last week, the town council had approved the appropriation that the town administrator had put forth in his budget document from April 12th. In addition, there was $335,000 that was basically rectified between at the state level, and that money was then funneled directly to the Franklin Public Schools. We factor that in. I'll let Bob talk a little bit more, but if you saw that presentation, you would have seen that we did incorporate that into our budget model. Bob, do you want to just continue with the budget update for the team?
Yeah, so we've been working through the what-if scenarios, trying to prepare for any whatever happens with the override. So we've talked about implementation of fees, which, as you know, is on the agenda this evening with the school committee. Lucas and the leadership team here at Central Office, plus the principals, have been working on creating a tiered system of reductions to staff, recognizing that if the override were not to pass, that we need to cut about $4.5 million out of the budget. When you think of the $6.3 million, you've got $1.6 million in new spending, new staff that we wouldn't implement. You've got some increases in fees, and then the balance would come out of staff reductions, as well as a small amount out of supplies. We're looking at 25% of supplies as a reduction. Supplies are pretty sparse to begin with, so it's not a big number. Just to give you some real numbers, you're probably looking at between 35 to 42 total staff. And again, we're processing the who, and that determines the how many. Once we identify the salary of each of those people, keeping in mind that a position may be eliminated that is professional status teacher, which gives them the ability to bump back into another position for someone who has less seniority. So it's the lower seniority person whose salary would be reduced, because they would be reduced. But again, a lot of that is tied to licensure and seniority lists that we have to adhere to according to the contract. So those are kind of moving targets in that process. But tentatively, you're looking at about 25 teachers, 3 counselors, 2 administrators, 3.6 ESPs, and then interventionists, activity monitors, and those are dollar amounts, and we would just work backwards based on salaries at about $28,000 per interventionist. So that's kind of where we are. Again, what you vote on the fees will also determine the numbers. If the decision is not to increase certain fees, then that represents additional staff because that's less revenue. We're going to talk tonight about revenue as one of the items and the perception that there's a lot of revenue available to put against the budget. And we're going to try to dispel that myth because it's not a reality. But I wanted to, so you'll see the real numbers here along with FY25 allocations so you know what we have, what's already allocated for next year, and how that flows. So that's kind of where we are with the FY25 budget. You know, obviously there's a process. If the override is not approved, we'd have to come back to the school committee and present a new budget that you'd have to vote on at your meeting on the 18th. So that's really what we're working on, is what does that budget look like that you're going to see.
All right, I'll go to questions from committee members.
Yeah, based on what you presented last time, you know, everything the budget doesn't, but the override doesn't pass, most of the school expenses will go up, like transportation.
Well, that's a school committee decision, but the recommendation is that they go up. They would all go up. Yeah. Everything, all the fees are recommended to go up in the event of a failed override. So.
So for the, just in looking at what we had seen a couple weeks ago versus what we saw at the town council meeting, the adjustment to the overall cost for busing and how that impacts the number of teachers that would actually be affected by this. What was the rationale kind of behind the proposed adjustment there? Because we went from what, fully funding through fees to then kind of dialing back by about half of the total,
right.
I believe.
Yeah, the conversation with the policy subcommittee was around the idea that there's a tipping point where if it's too big a number, people just aren't going to take the bus. And they're going to have grandparents drop kids off. And that's okay from a transportation perspective because we're not committed to any number of buses. Whatever the ridership is the number of buses that we have. So that's not so much the issue. It's the traffic congestion that it would cause at each local school with so much more traffic coming in. So they were trying to identify what that tipping point was that people would say, it's not, I can't afford it, or it's not worth it, I'm gonna drive. So that was the conversation, Lucas, I'm sure.
It was, the only other piece of it was, if we're only providing transportation to students who either get a free transportation, we would, our model would be based around providing buses, right, for folks that are either outside of the 2 miles, our required transportation,
right,
outside 2 miles. And by having a bus option that doesn't hit that tipping point, adds, so not, it's traffic, but also it allows you to have a bus and have it filled. If you don't, you know what I mean, if you're over 2 miles and try to look at routes and geography, I think that was part of that conversation as well, just around having it be available in a way that you want, you know, allowing people to still be able to afford it. That was the decision at that time.
No,
the impact is, and we talked through, the impact would be something else has to give. If you're not collecting as much, then you're either going to fee other things more or have to make further reductions, and that's how we left that meeting, and that's how it evolved.
Okay.
Yeah. I'll supplement that as a member of the policy subcommittee. But that was certainly a big concern that if, like, as you mentioned, the tipping point, that if it's too high, it'll reduce ridership so much that we won't collect enough revenue, and we'd have to make cuts in the back end anyways.
Okay. That makes sense. And then for me, the one other thing is just kind of looking at the staff, you know, looking at where 25 teachers would fit in. These are predominantly in the higher grades where there is, I wouldn't say there's any flexibility whatsoever, but there are less required courses that would have to be covered.
So the exercise included looking at class sizes across the district, looking at our recommendations that we have, and not and considering like K to 2 versus 3 to 5, 6 to 8, or 9 to 12. And then in addition, getting into a more compliance model education where you're looking at, you know, typically a high school where you have electives that round off your coursework, trying to look at the teachers you need to teach the core academic classes. Mm-hmm. And then in there, sometimes in your schedule, you can fit, you know, you teach 4, you know, English courses, but maybe there's a 5th block of it, and that's it. But I think the amount of we'd be packing it in to try to offset, but it will result in class size elevations at all levels and caseload elevations, you know, from less folks in non-educator roles, administrators. We talked a little bit, you know, counseling.
But also to answer your question, yes, we looked at, you know, enrollment by course at the high school level, you know, and those were considerations as well for, you know, if a class has 6 students signed up for it, it's not something we should be offering.
Right.
So we did look at those sorts of things.
And one more, if it's okay.
Sure.
Awesome. And in looking at some of those extracurriculars, that would include things like AP courses, correct? And that, because the reason I ask is because if those are things that are being cut, when people look at the perceived quality of the schools, one of the biggest indicators is really the percentage of students taking AP courses. So if we were to offer substantially less, then we could see kind of a negative cycle, that feedback loop of
right.
We don't have, but essentially the outward ratings become significantly lower because we can't offer AP courses. Then we start getting into that kind of disruptive cycle of, well, people aren't going to move here, then we have that kind of
right.
That loop, that feedback loop starts forming where we can't offer what it takes to actually draw more people to this town. And that,
correct.
But as soon as we kind of tip over that, that's
correct. It would be looking at each of the AP courses that we offer and then trying, we'd have to prioritize what we run and what we don't based on the number of FTE we have. We talked about cutting this many, there will
mm-hmm.
be impacts. And then it's programmatic impacts beyond AP. There are other, without getting too detailed in this conversation, just out of respect for, if you get too detailed, you start to identify. You would be looking at other types of programming that would also be impacted as well, that we offer in the school, that people, I think, want to see preserved or even grown, you know? So it's backwards. But I agree with you, when you start to get into that cycle of limiting and then not being somewhere the education is attractive, right, when you buy home.
Sounds good. Thanks.
Thank you. Could you please expand, or because you touched upon it, maybe just briefly expand upon the seniority aspect of how that gets factored into the decisions of what cuts get? Because last year we had some cuts, and I think there was some confusion or lack of
correct.
Understanding around the seniority aspect of that. So I think it might be worth reiterating or emphasizing just how big of a role that
correct.
Plays.
So we experienced cuts last year that resulted in this exact example. So you have, if a class at the high school is undersubscribed, and last year was a perfect example of some shifting that occurred where we had cut down and reduced the number of music teachers that we had in the district at the elementary level, in addition to art and other courses. However, the ripple effect was, when you reduce a position at the high school, for example, I'll take this out, if they have been teaching and they're a professional status teacher with over 3 years of experience and they have the right license, and music is typically a pretty broad license, K to 12 sometimes, right? So basically what happens is if the person that's in a teaching role and you say, hey, we're not going to have this role at the high school anymore, they're guaranteed a position over someone who has been hired within their first 3 years. So a non-professional status teacher, which is someone who is in their first 3 years, gets bumped. And what happens is the experience of the student in the community is we've cut this teacher, or we've cut the program. But what we've done is we've actually cut the program somewhere else, and now that educator is going to teach in the middle school in the music program. So we didn't actually cut the music at the program. We ended up reducing a position somewhere else, but that person had a right to a position over a non-tenured employee. And that type of ripple effect is what happens. We've experienced it. We go through that every year, but it's definitely become more of an impact because we've had to cut deeper in more every year, and we've tried to make the budget work. So that's what happens. And I think we can reiterate that again and try to make that clear, but ultimately, when we find places where we reduce, sometimes we reduce because of enrollment, and then they have a right to teach somewhere else. And then that impacts a different employee who's been newly hired. It could be someone who, if it's someone who has had an impact on, not that every educator does, but in certain situations, it definitely, last year would be a good example, someone who was made an impact that created an outcry from the community around the loss of that educator. And ultimately, I think it was misconstrued as though we had cut the program. We reduced the position at a different level, and then they were the one that were going to teach in that program. So, does that answer your question?
It does. Yeah. Thank you. Reiterate. So it's a complex web, so to speak. Especially when we're making cuts,
right
across the board, like these different things have. I guess chain reactions might be the best.
It's a chain reaction, and I think we're held to it, which is why we have to be really deliberate and thoughtful around when we cut, finding out who is the impacted individual, mm-hmm. which is what gets factored in for the business department on the salary, because it's not the position always. There's a chain reaction.
Yeah, and it's not personal to the teacher, and in this case, it's budgetary and enrollment, and
correct.
what was alluded to, where we have our requirements for the programs that we need to offer, and where, I guess, less prioritized programs would, I guess, fall into that, how that's all interrelated.
Right. Actually, I had a student last week during the FHS principal interviews say, hey, how can we as students have more say on the classes or who's teaching or the budget, you know, that way? Mm-hmm. And I said, actually, you vote with your requests. Our business department right now is growing, and there's a lot of requests for electives. So if a different department has not like highly subscribed electives where six kids want it or nine, your vote, ultimately the majority is voting on what types of courses they want to see at the high school. We're looking at also, I told you, the idea of those innovative pathways, and we're trying to align things so that we can create more predictability in our electives by saying, oh, you want to go medical or bio? We're going to tack on electives, maybe from other departments, that help you with this elective. And then by the time you graduate, you've hit the series of courses that give you a strong biology kind of background or a medical. You're going in that road. We can do that and start to look at other courses from other. But right now, the way which we were very big for a long time at Franklin High, where we offered a wide variety, but right now we're seeing electives come offline each year, because only six kids want them or whatnot. So it does create a bit of a ripple effect, but we have a plan if we can move through this budget year and start to focus on that.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Sure.
All right, so next up we have a revolving account update.
Over your shoulder. I don't think I made enough.
That's okay.
So this is the summary that you get every month with one additional column. So I just want to walk you through this and provide some detail and then kind of some insight into what it all means for us moving forward. So the description, I think, is self-explanatory. The balance forward is the amount that we started the year with July 1. So that was our starting amount. So you have an idea of what the balance was in each of these accounts this July 1st. And it's important that you then look at that in comparison to what's available at the end, in the last, second to last column, and see how those two compare. Current receipts is the money that's come in thus far this year, and that's cumulative. Year-to-date actual are the expenses against those accounts this year. Encumbrances are those things that we anticipate having to pay out from those accounts. And then the total expended is the year-to-date actual, or the expenses and the encumbrances added together. And then all of that is added and subtracted, and you get the available amount. So you can see what's available in each of these accounts this year, currently. And you can see that it's significantly less in most cases than where we ended last year. Now granted, some of these, like transportation and pre-K, we're gonna get a lot of money in June. So you'll see that increase so that our balance at the end of June 30th will be more than you're seeing it currently is available. But I'm not sure that it'll be up to where it was at the end of the year. And part of that is we spent a lot more out of many of our accounts this year against the budget, because that's what you budgeted. And then the revenues are down a little bit. We've got more students applying for financial aid and qualifying. So you're seeing a little bit less revenue. I want to draw your attention to the subtotal available, which is $6,048,000. And we heard on Wednesday night last week, you know, the question is always, how much do you have available? Well, keep in mind, it is a moving target. So if you look at that amount of $6,048,000, and you look at the last column, which is what we've committed to contributing from revenue against the budget, we've committed to $6.3 million, which is more than we have. Now granted, we're gonna get money in as the school year goes. So we'll be rebuilding that. But the idea that we can contribute more than we've already committed is not realistic. It's not the reality of where we are with our revolving accounts. So, you know, we'll see an influx if the fee structure goes up to some degree. Just to walk you through some of these, the circuit breaker, yep, we're gonna get one more payment of $1.8 million. So that number is gonna go from $3 million available to $4.8 million available, with $3.8 million committed against the budget. Property rental, you see an amount of $137,000 available. The town is gonna be taking $110,000 to charge off against custodial fees, other expenses, leaving us with the balance to pay against the things that we're committed to paying out of building rental. So that's gonna be down to virtually zero by June 1st, or whenever they choose to move those funds from our account to their expense side. Technology revolving, committed to paying for the insurance for those who, for some of our equipment, teacher laptops and whatnot. Lifelong learning, you can see a balance there as to what's available. And again, that's a self-funding program, same as food service. You see a significant balance there of available $926,000. That can only be used to pay for food service expenses. So it's not as though any of these accounts, the money can be used for anything. It's got to be very specific towards what the fee was towards. So transportation money can only go against transportation. Yes, it can cover insurance costs for van drivers, and lifelong learning can pay for insurance, workers' comp, other types of insurance for the folks who work in those programs. So just like the cafeteria employees can be charged off to those accounts. So I just wanted you to have a clear picture and have an answer when the public is asking you, why don't we put more revenue against the budget? It's not there. It's not prudent to do so. Okay?
Thank you. Questions from members?
So a couple. So one thing that I've heard a lot about is how, you know, some of the different fees we already have do cover part of the cost, such as transportation. Just kind of looking at the estimates here, it seems like we cover about, through fees alone, we only cover about 14-15% of the total cost.
It's a little bit more historically what our fee, based on what our fees have been. So 900,000 is what we usually commit against transportation, and the cost is about 1.7.
Okay, so a lot of those receipts come in.
We just now posted the bus signups.
Okay.
So now we'll start.
We'll start seeing the rest.
So that money comes in from June 1st till August 31st, and
okay,
then after that, it's a trickle.
Okay, that sounds good. And then in looking at kind of where the totals are, you know, versus, you know, the current receipts versus total expended, do we have a whole lot of expenses left? I know there's not a whole lot left in the year.
Not this year. We do not.
Okay.
I don't anticipate a whole lot of expenses. The only exception may be athletics, as I don't know if we've paid out spring sports yet, coaches. Not yet. So we'll have those coming in.
Okay.
Athletics.
And receipts are pretty much the same ballpark outside of transportation, which if people are like, pay now, then we'll get it. If not, it'll be later.
Right. Athletics comes in the summer, in August for the fall sports, but then the winter sports we don't get until the winter sports. Same for spring.
Okay. So the just for everyone watching, the reason I'm asking is in looking at the current receipts and actually adding in the 1.8 million for the circuit breaker, we come about as close to breaking even just on our expenses versus what we've taken in as possible. So current receipts would come into about 9.9 million. Total expended right now is just about 9.9 million. So if we have to pay the spring fees, then we're not balancing things out.
Yeah, the revenue
we're coming close, we're
in,
trying.
The revenue that came in this year did not match what we spent.
Right. That's my point.
That would be the case.
Yeah. And it is kind of that challenging situation where, yes, there's large amounts of money that move, but the money that comes in and is kind of sitting there might not be spent that month or that quarter, but it's going to be spent. And overall, if you look at the year in aggregate, it did not cover our expenses,
not
just a revolving
year
budget.
Right.
Okay. And that's, again, hard to predict because, well, there's this many line items and you can never really predict human nature.
Right.
So we just, okay. Awesome. Thanks.
My thing is there is a substantial difference between the YTD actuals and the current receipts. Almost about 300,000 difference.
Year-to-date actual are expenses, and current receipts is revenue.
It comes from our budget, right? It's been
nothing comes from our budget. None of this comes. This is all revenue that comes in through fees or other, you know, kids losing books, having to pay for them, those sorts of things.
The last thing is, what about the line number 332?
Yep.
Special education revolving. What is it? Special education.
Special ed revolving is, you remember Lucas and Paul Morano have been talking about the tuitioned in students that we would love to see, at least I'd love to see. We have one student who lived here who moved to Blackstone, I think. And Blackstone Millville, I believe, is tuitioning him in to stay here right now. So that was the first payment that you're seeing as revenue back in March or April.
That's right.
And that can only be used, that, you know, if we were to do that on a regular basis, we could use that to offset staff positions in those specialized programs, ideas. Strive,
goals, reach.
Right. To student programs. But it, you know, certainly would be significant in helping the budget out. One student for one of our programs tuitioned in would be anywhere from $46,000 to $80,000 a student.
We've never been in a position to really do that because of
space.
We've had very limited staffing margins too on what we're able to provide for the students that we have currently, but in a situation where we have the funding and the resources, these are options that it's an investment that return that has a return. And I think that's what we've tried to convey throughout the budget season around these ideas. So,
thank you. Just one question. So yeah, you highlighted very explicitly how we're have less money available for next year than we spent already this year. And we've talked about as well how the different receipts and fees come at different times. And so, if someone asks, like, well, you're getting money anyways, or so why don't we just spend them down more? I think another important part of that puzzle and issue here is that it's not only that the money comes in at different times, but also the bills come in at different times throughout the year, right?
Yep, that's correct. And the reality is, you never want asking us to spend down further is like asking us to budget check to check, basically.
Yeah.
And nobody wants to do that if they can avoid it. I understand not everybody can. But we as a municipality and a school district should be able to have reserves in the event of something significant. And I use special ed as the example. There is no special ed stabilization account. So if you have a student who moves in and needs an out-of-district placement that's residential at $300,000 a year, and we're at our budgeted number, where's that $300,000 coming from? We need to absorb that somehow through one of our revolving accounts or go back to the town and ask for more money. And if they don't have it, we have an issue. So we never want to be at that zero balance.
Sense to me. Thank you. Okay, and then lastly we have future school budget projections.
Lick your fingers anymore to separate the papers.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yep.
So I'm going to ask you to disregard the top chart for now. And I'm going to ask you to mark the bottom chart. You'll see a green town appropriation. Could you just label that as scenario one? And if you could label the red town appropriation as scenario two. So what scenario one represents is the what ifs if the override is successful and a projected budget. Scenario one represents the school portion at 60% plus 2.5% of that 60%. So you can see what the town's appropriation is to the town, which ultimately is our budget. So you can make that assumption for our budget. You have the total override value, so that's the 6.8 million plus 2.5% every year. So that's what's added to the tax rolls on an annual basis. The school portion, you can see that number, 4.1 million, 4.2, 4.3, okay? The second scenario is the school portion being 60% only? Because there's no guarantee in the pledge that we're getting the 2.5%. It's just a 60-40 split. We're guaranteed the 60%, which would mean $4 million every year. Okay? And the budget number that you see, the town appropriation, is what the budget would be each year at $4 million more per year. That $4 million is the amount that's been committed by the town council and the town administrator. So worst case scenario, your town appropriation, your school budget, is those numbers represented there. I then put the percent increase and the school as a total percent, as a percent of the total town budget. And that's based on the 60% plus 2.5%. I didn't do the calculation the other way. You can make the assumption that it's smaller. And how much smaller is somewhat irrelevant. What's relevant is to see the difference on the actual school district budget minus the 2.5% over time. The portion up top is the actual calculations for the town budget, and I made assumptions as it relates to the town budget, and I'm not confident that they're accurate. So I don't really want to speak too much to it, but it's here as a resource. I think the town budget is higher than what you're seeing there, so our percentage is a little bit less. It's closer to 53 point something, and then it will continue to go up. Questions, comments? I know, Dave, you had a different take on that 60-40 and how to explain it a little more clearly as to why it works. So I don't know if that's something you wanted to ask about or share or...
Yeah, sure. So, yeah, we're beginning some questions regarding some confusion about, well, we'll just focus on the bottom part in terms of, like, the numbers there. With, you know, the initial 6.3 and then the different 40% being added onto that, and the, you know, the thoughts that that essentially FY26 would only be adding that that 4 million, that 4.1 million or 4.2 million number over FY24 essentially. But what this is showing us is just the override amount. It's not taking into account the increase that we would be getting from the town anyways.
The 2.5% that you would normally get as a minimum in the tax levy is not included in this. So as an appropriation, you're not seeing that. It's I guess, for lack of a better term, as Lucas would say, it's baked in to that number already. So all you're really seeing is 2.5% more than you normally would, and that's how we're getting to that 4 million.
Okay. I guess put another way, this is just the override amount in a bubble, in a vacuum, and we're, as you said, assuming the increase that we'd be getting anyways, and this is on top of that, and that's why we're getting these numbers here.
Correct. The 6.3 and then the 4 millions are included in the tax base moving forward on the past override.
Yep.
The 2.5% is a typical annual increase that we try for. We know in I can't think of a year. I'm trying to think now. Last year it didn't start at 2.5%, if you remember, and then there was an adjustment. So that's, I think, where I would just point to that's a variable. It's not guaranteed.
Yeah, there are very few instances where you've gotten more than 2.5%. If you have 2.5%, so I mean that's been about the average over a 10-year period. So you know, being at 5% as a commitment, you know, if nothing else, it allows you to plan. If you know what your budget is going to be at a minimum, and that's your target, then you can live within it. And that's I feel like that's a commitment that you have, particularly with scenario two. You know, you can hope for scenario one, but at a minimum, you've got scenario two. And that's virtually guaranteed.
Thank you. Questions from members?
It's all projections, one, so yeah. I don't have any much questions on this.
So on my end, you know, I think, you know, I can definitely understand why people are concerned about it when it comes to kind of the overall, like, again, projections, where it depends a lot on kind of what the town ends up doing outside of this window. But in looking at what that window becomes, I think it is also pretty significant. My back of the napkin here, based on what you have, is there's a $2 million gap between us getting the $4 million plus 2.5%
yep.
versus just the $4 million. Yep. But what I think is also important to recognize with that is exactly what Lucas and Jamie have been saying kind of all along, is that it's about the overall pie.
Right.
So
right.
we do have that kind of stability. We do have that ability to project. And it is still, it's not an insignificant amount of money, right? This is not talking about the town not appropriating additional amounts every year, potentially offsetting some of that. But it does start going towards rectifying the concerns that we have about the size of the pie. The fact that we don't have any money for roads.
Right.
Over time, it allows that kind of flexibility to be built in where we can plan. And obviously, you know, the hope is that the schools will be able to continue to sustain a large support from the town, which I think this is really that commitment to. But I do want to make sure that people kind of do see that.
Yeah.
That is not a small amount of money at the end of the five-year window. However, what it's not doing is really taking from what we've been assured that we're getting. It is saying, okay, with the extra, we can really start looking at what fires need to be put out this year.
Right.
Where do we need that extra funds? Where if the schools, I think we're in dire straits for some reason, let's say we have a lot of move-ins. You know, to your point,
yeah.
a couple of move-ins could be, you know, one move-in could be $300,000. Well, I think if we had a significant number, the town wouldn't say, well, good luck.
Right.
We would definitely get some additional support. But in the other years, and we have talked a lot about trying to improve efficiency and really creating that kind of sense of we invest and save in the long run,
mm-hmm.
the hope is that we can give ourselves even more room over time
right.
and allow the town to really benefit from this partnership.
Correct.
Where I think, yes, fine, the concern immediately looking at it, yes, we're not getting all of it if you project out with the 2.5%. However, we're getting a lot of it, and we're getting that stability, which is, I think, that's where the important message
is. The other piece
is
the 40% does not preclude any type of work that may directly benefit schools. And I can think of an example of meeting at one of our schools recently to talk about the drop-off loop.
Yeah.
And meeting with DPW and the town engineer to try to brainstorm how this loop could be organized differently based on the number of students that are ACDC and looking at that.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a conversation. But ultimately, if there are going to be changes or recommendations that come, that's coming out of the DPW, the town engineer. Like any type of move, it's not really a school function to redesign or to implement. So there's an example I would think of where we work together, but if their budgets are strained and our budgets are strained, we're at that point. So I just think the 40% doesn't preclude work that needs to be done that's a direct benefit of either school building or school property as a result. So that's my interpretation of some of that as well.
Well, again, to that point, we do have the town is obligated to spend to help support those schools,
right.
like from a structural standpoint,
yeah.
from certain facility support. So that 40%, it sounds like it just kind of goes off the distance. But as you're mentioning, there's a mandate that comes back, where,
right.
and they don't put that on our books in the same way. So like our operating budget is independent of that. So that 40% still,
correct.
Yes, it is a different pot of money, but it's not that it doesn't benefit the schools
right.
in a very direct sense.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Correct.
Awesome.
That's all I have. And thank you for putting the summaries together. And again, you know, I think we can't predict the future in terms of actual receipts and what the tax levy will be looking like. But I think this is a very helpful conceptual projection of what we can pretty well expect. And I think it's important to state that this is a very good idea. Of course, can't guarantee exact numbers because we can't predict the future in terms of income, but this is a very good idea of what we have to plan for and what we can expect our financial situation to look like in the next few years.
So, you know, ultimately, you're looking at $20 million more for a six-year period.
Thank you. Anything else from Bob, Lucas? Any questions from members?
Also.
All right. Well, in that case, I'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
I'll second that.
Need a motion?
Yeah. I have a motion to adjourn the meeting, school subcontractor meeting.
And a second?
I'll second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
All right. It's time being 6:50. We are adjourned. Thank you.
We are now producing this in collaboration with Franklin TV and Franklin Public Radio. This podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, but we can't do it alone. We can always use your help. How can you help? If you can use the information that you find here, please tell your friends and neighbors. If you don't like something here, please let me know. Through this feedback loop, we can continue to make improvements. And I thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is titled Ernesto Mañana, copyright Michael Clark and Tintype Tunes in 2008, and used with their permission. I hope you enjoy. By the way, you can also subscribe and listen to Franklin Matters Radio on your favorite podcast app. Search in podcasts for Franklin Matters.